listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. The good doctor, Dr. Mike Newcomb, sitting in today with our good friend, Eric. Eric, say hi.
I'm here.
He's here.
I'm here. Hello, everybody.
Excellent, excellent. Well, listen, we've got a great show in store today, but we do have a special guest on the line right now. There has been a perfect storm of sorts, if you would call it that. The government shutdown, the debt ceiling crisis, and Obamacare. Three things coming together as a head, Eric.
Yes, it's very interesting.
It's very interesting. So that being said, we do have C. Edmund Wright, who is a conservative commentator, a contributor to Breitbart and American Thinker, and also author of, I can't say this on the air, but I'll give you the initials, WTF, right?
Right.
WTF, question mark, how Karl Rove and the establishment lost again. And we're going to be talking about actually Obamacare and why conservatives want to defund Obamacare. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest to the program. His name is C. Edmund Wright, and let's get him on the line right now. Welcome.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Oh, every day's a blessing, right?
Absolutely.
You know, some are nightmares, but hey, I think they're all blessings. So,
just for the record, WTF is the official title, so you know, you don't have to. You can fill in the blanks as you see fit.
There you have it. There you have it. All right, now, do you like to be referred to as C. Edmund or just C?
Edmund will be better. How about that?
All right, Edmund. Okay, that sounds good. All right, well, listen, Edmund, obviously there's a lot of controversy going on right now. You know, we have a government in America that's shut down. We're perceived as the laughingstock of the world right now from everything that I'm hearing out there. The government just can't get anything done. We have a looming debt ceiling crisis, you know, sometime later this month. And then also we have the law of the land, the Affordable Care Act, which is sort of being held hostage by the, you know, many conservatives wanting to completely defund the health care law. And Obama and the Democrats said, no way, Jose, that's not going to happen. So give us your take on things. Where do you see things as they stand right now, Edmund?
Well, I would agree there is sort of a perfect storm of big events, you know, and the three major issues you mentioned, the shutdown slash CR, the Obamacare rollout, and the debt limit ceiling deadline coming up in just a few days. Having said that, you know, laughing stock of the international community, I mean, you know, that's one of those sort of non-story stories. You can find people to say that at any time for any number of reasons. I really don't care what people in other countries who have no understanding of our Constitution, of our Republic, of our government think. You know, they're not going to get what we do under any administration, and whether we're moving in a liberal position or moving in a conservative direction, they're not going to understand it, so I don't worry too much about that. As far as the Obamacare shutdown, obviously, coming from my point of view, I think this is a hill to die on. I think this is something that will ultimately be a winner for the conservatives, and I think that if it's ever fully implemented, it will be a loser for the country.
Interesting. All right, now, as a point of disclosure, Evan, I just want to let you know I am a practicing physician, a geriatric physician, been practicing in internal medicine for about 20-plus years right now, so I'm quite familiar with the healthcare system. I'm familiar with Medicare. I'm familiar with the private insurance industry. So I did want to have kind of an honest, robust discussion with you today on why do conservatives really, as you said, want to make this sort of the last stand, the last battle that you're willing to, and using your words, die on the hill for this subject matter, when in reality there are people literally dying out there in our healthcare system who don't have access to healthcare, who, given the system that we have, Edmund, that I see right now, it's completely broken. And I truly believe, as an internist and a geriatrician who sees these people on a day-to-day basis, unlike insurance bureaucrats who push papers and basically have nothing to do with delivering patients care, they're the ones making the decisions about health care. Why do you see this as a bad thing?
Well, first of all, full disclosure, I've been in the life and health industry for a long time, and I have written widely on the subject and come from a family of physicians for about four generations.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say to you that I respect your credentials and I respect your opinion, but you are in a tiny minority of those actual practicing physicians who believe that. Especially those who are trying to have an independent practice or a small practice as a part of being part of a hospital system. But the reason the healthcare system is broken now is because of government intervention and because of separating the customer from the payment, if you will. The problems are too much government, not too little government. Now, Mike, when we had a system years ago where we paid for healthcare under what were called the major medical policies, that was a very clean system that was working. They were akin to today's catastrophic care policies. It didn't cost very much to buy the insurance, and what you had was coverage against the catastrophe financially, because healthcare insurance cannot protect your health any more than auto insurance can protect your car. What insurance is strictly a mechanism of financial planning against a catastrophic situation that would wipe out your assets. And when we had this as the norm in this country, there was no healthcare crisis. And the uninsured and the indigent and all that could be handled without bringing everyone else directly into that system. And that's where we need to return. And I will agree, the health insurance industry has jumped in bed with government and helped create this mess. And I am certainly not defending them, because they have made almost every wrong decision. But 20, 30, 40 years ago, we had a much better system, and it was really a much simpler system.
All right, so let's go through this point by point, Edmund. So for instance, let me ask you this. How important is it from your perspective as a conservative that a consumer, a patient, has choice, has a say in their health care?
That's very important, and that's what we see, by the way, with iPhones and sushi bars and health clubs and now auto insurance, and nobody is claiming a catastrophe in those industries.
So, but you would agree with me that
system.
So you would agree for sure that a patient should have a choice and a significant say in their health care.
Yes, I absolutely would.
Okay, now let's compare the private sector versus the government-run system, Medicare, just for the hell of it, okay? Let's just see, which one would you say, Edmund, has more patient choice?
Well, I don't buy the premise that the private system is actually totally private, nor do I buy the premise that Medicare is totally government. So I think it's a false comparison.
Well, I
will stand by the fact that the perversions in the insurance market, the perversions in coverage versus intended coverage,
okay,
the way there's a lot of post-de facto government regulation after the actuarial figures have already been contemplated.
Okay, hold on. I don't want to get off track here. I'm just asking a very simple question. We're talking about you said there's too much government, and that's the contention. That's the mantra that we hear from all the conservative commentators. Get government out of the way. Let the doctors and the patients do what they need to do. Too much government, too much overkill. Government, government, government. So I'm giving you an opportunity now. I am in favor of the government system. I like Medicare, okay? You obviously don't like government, or you want government out of the way, so I would assume you definitely subscribe to the private market solution, correct? Or no? Or am I mistaken?
Well, obviously, yes, I do subscribe.
Okay, all right, that's fine. So you like the private sector. So what I'm asking you right now, and we're coming up on a break, so it's not anything gotcha here. You don't have time to think about it during the break. But what I'm asking you is that under the Medicare system, the patients have way more choice, absolutely more choice than in the private setting. As you know, being in life insurance throughout your career, the whole concept of a private insurance company is to set up walls and barriers between the patient and their doctors, and it's known as pre-authorization. And you can think about this, but you know for a fact that every single private insurance company out there, if I as a doctor want to order a test, if you were to be sick, Edmund, and you had chest pain, I would have to go to your insurance company and say, Mother, may I? Can I get this test for Edmund? Even though I'm a doctor and I trained my whole life to do this, I need to get authorization from you, versus under the government system, Medicare, I can see you, Edmund, I can make my, I could do my history, my physical, and I can order that test without any government bureaucrat telling me you can't do that. So why don't you think about that, and when we come back, I want to talk about the concept of patient choice, and then the fact that, a patient can choose his doctor. You can't do that in a private insurance network without penalties. They have closed networks. Medicare is an open network. We'll talk about that.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Sit in for Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, Dr. Mike. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom today. We do have a esteemed guest here. His name is C. Edmund Wright, also known as Edmund. He's a conservative commentator, author of WTF, How Karl Rove and the Establishment Lost Again. And we're talking about Obamacare, obviously a very controversial issue, although I don't see it as controversial because it's actually the law of the land and it was deemed constitutional by the Supreme Court and the people reelected Obama on the actual Obamacare Affordable Care Act. But in any case, so Edmund, let's get through this because I do want to have a good conversation with you about this. So obviously I am a proponent of the government Medicare system. I think it's a great system. I work in it. I love it. I think it's one of the best healthcare systems in the world. You beg to differ. You think you want to die on the hill for this because of your belief in how healthcare should be run. But let's get back to that one question because it's about liberty. It's about freedom. It's about an individual having the choice to have control over their healthcare, which clearly is superior in the Medicare system versus the private insurance market. So the question that I had posed to you before we had left was the question of, you know, why is it that when one of my patients has an insurance product, a private insurance healthcare product, I have to say, mother, may I, and ask whether or not I can do the test. I have to go through an insurance bureaucrat versus in the government, I have the liberty and the freedom to practice as I see fit. And then the follow-up question is, why is it that Medicare, once I sign up as a physician, it's an open network, which means that any patient can choose any doctor in the Medicare network versus the private insurance company market. They close the networks. They make them very small. And then if a patient wants to go outside that network to continue, say, a relationship with a doctor they had for years, the insurance company then charges them a tax that they have to pay more to see that same doctor. So speak directly to those two specific questions.
Well, I'll speak. Well, first of all, it's a very nice question, which sounded a lot like a campaign speech to me. With all due respect, Mike, I absolutely reject every premise that you base your question upon. I absolutely reject that Medicare is loved by doctors and patients. I absolutely reject it's a totally open system in practice because when most doctors refuse to work under the Medicare reimbursement schedule, the fact that it's an open system if there's no doctors there for the patients makes it irrelevant.
Okay.
And the next thing I would do, and the next straw man you put up there, was trying to make it sound like the private medical insurance healthcare delivery system of 2009 before Obamacare is what we are supporting. No, it's not. That system was already about 50 years into government-induced perversion. And again, I said, I do not absolutely support the way the major healthcare insurance companies, who, by the way, have signed on to this train wreck, have conducted their business in the last two or three
years. All right, so let me get back, because what I really want to compare with you today is the difference between government-run healthcare, Medicare, and private insurance. So would you agree with me, at least, that Medicare is an open network system and that the private insurance market is a closed network system, and that
I would not agree with you.
Oh, come on, Evan, you got to at least be. So you're telling me that if I go to Cigna today, or if I go to Humana or United Healthcare,
I didn't say that. You are trying to get me to answer a complex question with a one or two words.
It's not complex. Let me ask you this. Let me rephrase it for you. Do private insurance networks? Wait,
well,
come on, Edmund. These are easy. I'm giving you the easy questions right now. I haven't even gotten to the hard ones. So you're saying that the private insurance company in America are not closed networks. In other words, if I went to Humana today and I said, I want to see this doctor, they're not going to tell me, well, it depends on which product you buy. Certain doctors are in certain networks, and if you go with an HMO, you might not have any charges. If you go with a preferred provider organization, a PPO, guess what? And you go outside the network, we're going to charge you extra. Are you telling me that doesn't happen in the private insurance company market?
No, well, first of all...
Yes or no? Just does that happen or not? But does that happen? Edmund, does that happen or not?
Let me say this for the fourth time. What we have now, even in the private market, is a long way away from an actual free enterprise private system. I know the insurance...
Right, so what I'm asking you, what's superior from your perspective? Say they both have their misgivings. They both have their failings, okay? We understand that. There's no perfect system. Everybody knows that. But what I'm asking you, what is more important to you, for a patient to have choice or for the insurance company to dictate who the patient goes to. Because in Medicare, it's an open network, and in private insurance, it's not. That's the simple question I'm asking you.
The simple fact is, Mike, there is going to be a limited supply of money in both situations. There's a 15-person IPAB panel of unelected, unaccountable...
All right, I know all those talking points. So I'm asking you a simple question.
I am telling you...
What's better, an open system... Or a closed system. How about that? That's an easy one.
Obamacare is going to be a closed system. The government
is
going to have the final say.
Edmund, what's better in healthcare delivery for a patient? An open network of physicians that you can choose from or a closed circumscribed network? That's all I'm asking.
I reject the premise of that.
Come on!
Because I know where you're going with that. You're trying to make it sound like there's going to be an endless supply in every government health.
That's not what I'm asking you. I'm just asking you from a patient.
Private is going to be no, that's an absurd.
Okay, let me ask you this. Do you believe that a patient should have the liberty to choose their own doctors without any restrictions? How's that one?
In a perfect world, everybody would want that, but no system can probably deliver that.
Okay, so but if you had a system, but if you...
A patient, Mike, is like any other customer. You can buy any car that you want that you can afford. You can buy any... Go to any sushi restaurant you want
right.
that you can afford.
So you believe in individual liberty, right? You believe in freedom, like I do, right? You and I believe in individual liberty and freedom, and that a patient should have the ability to go and see whatever doctor they want to see without a penalty or a surcharge or a tax.
As long as you're not enslaving the doctor, absolutely.
All right, so then you believe in an open system, then. You believe in an open system.
Hey, by the way, Mike, an open system for customers and providers.
All right, well, listen, when we get back here, I want to continue this conversation. We're here with C. Edmund Wright, conservative commentator, also author of W2F, How Karl Rove and the Establishment Lost Again. Edmund, I want to get back to that one question we didn't ask about, that we didn't finish on the fact that a doctor has to ask permission, mother, may I, in the private insurance sector, and I want your comments on that. And I have some other questions about certain aspects of Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, when we get back. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Dr. Mike Newcomb, and believe me, an open system is better than a closed system. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in today. We're having a good discussion here about Obamacare and why conservatives want to defund it. We're with C. Edmund Wright. He's the author of the book WTF, How Karl Rove and the Establishment Lost Again. And we were just talking about, and we're going to move on now, but we were talking about the concept of an open network, which both he and I agree, the American consumer, when you go out to buy a car, you should be able to go to any car dealership you want. If you want to go to a restaurant, you should go to any restaurant that you want. You shouldn't be discriminated against. And that's the whole concept behind an open network, which is what Medicare is. Medicare is an open network which allows patients the choice, the freedom, the liberty to go to the provider, the doctor, Eric, that they want to choose without having to pay a tax. Now, just so people know, and we're going to get back here with Evan, I just want to explain, with a closed network, though, the difference is they pit doctor against doctor. So in other words, if you don't play by the rules of the insurance company, if you don't do what they tell you to do, if you're not their robot, their automaton, then guess what happens, Eric? You get left out of the network. You're dumped out of the network. And that's the whole concept of a closed network. That's why insurance companies do that, so they can mitigate their risk and only get the doctors in their network who will do what they say so that they can increase their profit. So that's the way an open and a closed network works. And then we're going to move on. So, Edmund, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. I totally reject that last definition.
I know. You reject everything I said.
Everything.
But we're going to move on. So in any case, let's go to the concept of the government bureaucrat versus the insurance bureaucrat, because that's another central piece of the Affordable Care Act, mm-hmm. allowing patients to have that autonomy, to have that doctor-patient relationship, which is interfered with by insurance bureaucrats. And just let me give you my history, and you can comment on this. And what has historically happened is that in Medicare, because it is an open network, there is no pre-authorization, as you know, and you've been in life and health insurance. But in a private insurance company, patients also know this.
All right, but I have to stop you there. So what you're saying is Medicare is open and they approve everything all the time, and every doctor is willing to accept their reimbursement schedule. Is that what you're telling me? Well, because you are building your case based on that fantasy.
What I'm telling you is that in the insurance market, you have to do, you don't have to do pre-authorization in Medicare. Under an insurance company's rules and regulations, anytime that you get a test done that's over a certain dollar, that's a certain dollar limit. Hold on. Anytime you have to go to get a test done, whether it's a CAT scan, if I'm a doctor, if I want to get an MRI scan, say you came to see me, Edmund, okay, and you had Medicare, and I thought you might have a brain tumor, a cancer, okay, you have all these symptoms, I would order the MRI, and I would write the script out, the patient would take it to the radiology place or the hospital, would get it done. If you had Humana or some private insurance company, guess what? I would write that out, but it's not approved. It has to go through an approval process. So there's an insurance bureaucrat directly interfering, Edmund, with you and I. I'm the doctor. I'm making a diagnosis. I'm trying to save you from cancer. And your insurance bureaucrat is going to say, wait a second, Dr. Newcomb. I know you went to school for all these years. I know you're well-trained and you're an expert in what you do, but I'm the insurance guy. I'll tell you what you do or you don't do. Now, tell me, is that a better system? Do you prefer that, or do you prefer the Medicare system without any government bureaucrats?
Mike, you are presenting so many straw scenarios. You are giving straw a bad name. That is, what you were saying is somewhat right, but not totally right on how the private insurance market works. It also totally ignores the whole concept of HSA and high deductible, which is the best way to go, which Obamacare is making illegal. And third, it's assuming that on the other side of this wonderful Obamacare utopia, that everything's going to be yes, 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 all the tests, all the treatment, all the drugs, no problem. We appointed 15 people to keep costs down, but they're never going to say no. I mean, just you keep constructing these things in a straw fashion, and maybe you are used to guests who don't get that, but that's not what we have today.
All right, so I've been practicing medicine for 20 years.
Yeah, he's telling you, a doctor.
I'm telling you how it is out there in the field. I know this because I experience it every day.
I also know that almost every other doctors are widely against it. If what you said was true, they would all agree with you.
No, the doctors are not widely against this. Many of the major medical associations have supported the Affordable Care Act.
Medical associations are full of bureaucrats, not doctors. Come on, you can.
Okay, all right. So then let's do this then. If you want to go through that route, I'll go off on a tangent with you. So do you believe? So what you're saying is that if more doctors are against this Obamacare, then it must give validity, right, to the fact that doctors don't want it and there should be an alternative solution, correct?
Well, yes or no?
Absolutely.
Yes, that's
right. Okay, all right. So what you're saying is the people have spoken, basically. The people have spoken. As far as you're concerned, there's a lot of doctors who don't want Obamacare, and that should really be grist for moving to a different solution. So let me ask you this, okay? Let's look at traditional Medicare right now as we speak. Traditional Medicare, all right? What would you say, you're in the life and health insurance industry, what percentage of patients have chosen traditional Medicare over the private insurance products right now? What would you say that mix is? It's a very simple question. It's not a trick question.
It's another straw question. If you have been forced for 40 years...
Nobody's forced. Nobody's forced. You have a choice right now. You have a choice between private insurance and government-run insurance. What I'm asking you, Edmund, is a simple question. What percent of the people under Medicare right now have elected to keep the government-run program, and what percent of the people have used choice and picked up the private insurance product that you say is so superior? Tell our listeners right now how that breaks down.
Well, first of all, again, it's another straw question.
It's not a straw question. It's a percent question.
I've got a really good answer for this one.
It's a percent question.
I am paying Medicare now, before I will have the choice. I will be paying for it for 40 years, give or take, before I will have the choice to then use it or not.
Edmund, this is an SAT question. It's a math question. Edmund, it's not a straw question. It's a math question.
Of course you will.
How did you ever answer a question on the SATs? Was every question a straw question to you?
No, there were no straw questions.
He rejected them.
Did you reject every question? I reject this question on the premise that it's a straw question. It's a simple percent question. What percent of the consumers have chosen?
I'll answer it. Lower than the percent of consumers who were forced to pay for it against their will, which is 100%.
All right, so we're going to move on to the next question. But just so the listening audience knows, the answer to this is the follows. About 85% of Medicare recipients, 85%, that includes Republicans, Democrats, conservatives, liberals, libertarians, 85% have chosen the traditional health care product over the private insurance product. The people have spoken. The people have spoken, Edmund. They have spoken, have chosen the government substantially in a major landslide. If somebody won an election, 85 to 15%. That's what the people have done. So basically your argument before was that, oh, the doctors are against this, so this is a bad thing.
Don't do what?
I reject that premise.
Childish games with the syntax.
It's not a childish game. 85%.
If I pay for something for 40 years, will I take it? Well, of course I will.
All right. So, but people have
paid for it.
People have the choice to go into private insurance. They could do the private insurance
and pay for that too.
Say Medigap or something like that. Anyway.
No, Medicare Advantage. Do you know what a Medicare Advantage plan is?
Yes, I know what it is. I mean, but
tell people what a Medicare Advantage plan is.
A Medicare Advantage—that's a gap program that picks up coverage for additional premium above and beyond the base Medicare.
No, that's not. That's a supplemental program. That's not a gap program. What Medicare Advantage is that people can say, "I don't want the government program. I want to go into a private insurance company's run program." And Medicare says to the Medicare Advantage plans, rather than us giving you, say, you know, $10,000 per month to run the patient, we're going to give you 95% of that, so you get $9,500. So the insurance company takes $9,500 and then they run the benefit. That's what's called a Medicare Advantage. So in other words, people could either have the government run program or they can go to the private run program. And what I'm telling you is 85% of the people have chosen traditional Medicare, only 15% have chosen the private product because the private product, quite frankly, is inferior. They don't like it. They don't get choice. It's a closed network. There's insurance bureaucrats, and that's why the government-run system is superior. But let's forget about that. So let's go to the next question I want to ask you about Obamacare. One of the big things in the Obamacare, which I think many people like, is the fact that insurance companies can no longer discriminate against people based off of pre-existing conditions. So my question to you is very simple. Should an insurance company have the right to tell somebody, no, I am not going to cover you because you're sick?
First of all, yes, if it's insurance, pre-existing conditions, and follow me closely here, Mike, coverage for pre-existing conditions is not insurance. That is called welfare. Now, I agree, there needs to be a government component for the pre-existing condition market. And actually, we already have a government component because hospitals are not allowed not to treat them and all of this. But I'll agree that that is a situation that needs to be handled, but it can be handled separately and much less expensively and without destroying liberty the way Obamacare does.
Okay, so let me ask you this.
That when the house is on fire, it is not insurance to go get the policy at that point.
Okay,
a welfare program. Now, you can sit there and say all you want that the insurance companies are denying coverage, but let me tell you something. If you're going to pay $500 a month and you're going to guaranteed cost the insurance company $2 million in the next 3 years because of some catastrophic illness, then what you're doing is you're saying we're simply going to put the insurance companies out of business and make this a single government payer, which is what everybody supporting Obamacare intellectually really
wants. Okay, well, listen, when we get back, I want to talk about your concept of welfare when somebody's sick and it's welfare, but obviously we'll talk about that. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Dr. Mike Newcomb proving why government-run healthcare is superior to private insurance markets. Okay, welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in today. We're going to conclude our interview, and I give him a lot of credit. He stuck with us for an hour. See Edmund Wright, and we're going to plug his book. He's the author of WTF, How Karl Rove and the Establishment Lost Again. And in its preface, it says it's a straw argument, and I reject that argument. No, I'm just joking. That's not what it says. But in any case, Edmund, welcome back to the program.
Yes, well, look, you get to answer ask a 900-word question. I need more than 3 or 4 words to answer that, all right?
All right, but you've been a good sport. But let me finish up with what you said about welfare. Now, we talked about the concept of pre-existing condition, which under the Affordable Care Act, no insurance company can now discriminate against somebody who has, you know, an illness through no fault of their own, perhaps. But listen, I agree with the house on fire.
I agree with
the house on fire. The house on fire, if your house was on fire and then all of a sudden you go to the insurance company and say, I need, you know, homeowners or property insurance, I agree with that. But that being said, there's a little bit thing that's different here, Edmund, is that I can have a patient, say, who's got high blood pressure. You can come into my office and say you had a blood pressure of 140 over 90, a little high, okay? That doesn't mean that you're a time bomb and you're going to just blow up at some point. That means that if you have high blood pressure and you get into the doctor and I talk to you about diet, about exercise, about healthy living, and even maybe give you, you know, a medication, you could probably live hypothetically with that hypertension and be cured for the rest of your life and have no adverse consequences. But what the insurance companies do, and you tell me if I'm wrong here, but I'll give people a quick 101 in the insurance companies. What a private insurance company is all about, ladies and gentlemen, is the following. You and me and Edmund and Eric, we all, and Tom, put our money into a big pool, okay? It's called the benefit pool. We pay a premium. Think of it as a gallon of milk. All that money goes up, and the gallon of milk is filled atop. Now the insurance company has that gallon of milk full of money. It's all money there. The way the insurance company makes money is to make sure that not a drop, if they could, of that milk goes out of that gallon, because the more that stays there at the end of the year, guess what? The CEO, like the guy from United, he makes $100 million a year. The guy from Humana, the CEO, makes $15 million a year. If they can keep all that money in that pot, they get rich. They're not providing health care. They're not doing the work that I do as the doctor. That's what a private insurance company is all about. It's about keeping the money in the pot so that it doesn't go out and they make profits. Okay, would you agree at least with that, Edmund? That's how it works.
Some of that. Let's talk about what insurance really is. So if you really want to know what insurance is nothing but the insurance company. And by the way, you know, if you're going to be intellectually honest for 1 second, you know that for every 100 ounces of milk in that bottle, about 97 to 98 ounces go out every year. The health insurance industry runs on incredibly thin margins. And I will tell you a couple of things.
Yeah, on billions and billions of dollars of premiums. I would take a thin margin of 2-3% if I'm talking about a $2.6 trillion healthcare industry.
But hold on a second. I understand that. But the problem is what a thin margin means. And again, I think I may be talking about some business reality here that perhaps your experience hasn't contemplated. What a thin margin means is if things go just a little bit awry, then you're talking about losing billions and billions, not making billions and billions. In other words, you're talking about being out of business.
Because I
will tell you something, Mike. If the check to you for the electrocardiogram bounces, you're certainly not going to be willing to walk in and do the $100,000 bypass operation knowing you're not going to get paid. We all want patients to get care every time. We want that utopia. The question is, what is the best way to get as close to that as possible without enslaving healthcare providers?
Well, first of all, healthcare, like I believe, like you do, in the concept of individual liberty and individual freedom, and I, nor any of my doctors that I know of, my colleagues, have ever been enslaved or told to do anything. We have the ability to look at a contract, read it, and sign it if we want. And if we don't like the contract, we could say, so there's no enslaving.
Why do you need an insurance bureaucrat? Okay, what you're doing, if you're such a magnanimous human being, why don't you do a few for free when the insurance company says no, and then just do the
actually, we do.
When they say yes. I mean,
actually, I do. I've done quite a bit of charity work in my year because I've got rejected from insurance companies who wouldn't pay for something that they should have paid for. But let me ask you this, Edmund, in all honesty, you know, I went to medical school. I trained. I worked hard my whole life. I don't come from a family of physicians. I don't come from a family of wealth. You know, I bootstrapped it myself. I took student loans out. Everything that a conservative would dream of and a true patriot, a true American. I went to medical school first to go to college, got my degree. I'm a practicing physician. I worked really hard to get where I'm at right now. Why should I have to be at the bequest of an insurance bureaucrat, a CEO who makes $100 million a year, $15 million a year.
But let me ask you this.
My question to you is, what value does an insurance company provide to the patient? I care for the patients. I make sure they don't get sick and get heart attacks and strokes like that. Tell me honestly, from your perspective, what is the value? What is the actual value that an insurance company provides to a patient?
Well, obviously, you understand the insurance model only from the corporate side. You apparently do not understand it from the consumer side. I'll go back to what I said at the top of the show, Mike. Insurance is a financial planning instrument. The value to you as the patient is that you know for X dollars a year, let's say, and let's go back to something simple. Let's go back to the homeowner's analogy. You know that, say, for $1,000 a year, you're going to protect your $700,000 asset, that you're not going to show a loss of $700,000 that year on your home. You will show a loss of $1,000. That's what you will pay in exchange for knowing that you're not going to have the $700,000.
Right. So basically you want people to feel as though
it should be that you know you're going to pay $10,000 a year or whatever it is.
I understand. We're running out of time here, Evan. So basically what Evan's saying, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get to all your calls. The phones are packed right now. We've had a robust discussion, but what he's saying is that in essence that he wants you the consumer, the patient, to basically be in a casino when it comes to your health. When it comes to your life, your health, your well-being, you got to, you know, roll the dice. You got to play roulette, and you got to basically hope and cross your fingers that, you know, you made a good deal with the insurance company, because if you don't, you're going to go bankrupt and you're going to lose your assets. And I don't think that's what most people think of when they think of insurance. And if that's the case, I'm sure that's not what they want it to be. And that's why they like Obamacare. All right, listen, we appreciate your time. It's C. Evan Wright. He's author of WTF, How Karl Rove and the Establishment Lost Again. Go out there, check out his book. And Evan, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program, hour number two here, and a special thanks to C. Edmund Wright for appearing on the show. But I'll tell you, he wouldn't say anything, Eric. I mean, I tried to just be very basic with the questions.
Not even the simplest questions.
You know, because the bottom line is this, man, is that if you really want to look at government health care and the way it's run today versus private insurance companies, everything that they say bad about the government-run program is really true about the private-run healthcare system. That's why I say when they're conservatives, they're con artists. I mean, they really are, because if they're saying something, I can assure you, if whatever they're saying bad about the government-run system, it's the complete opposite, and it's applicable to the private insurance company. And that's why I try to go through little by little by little. Do you believe in an open network versus a closed network? Do you believe a doctor has to say, "Mother, may I," to get a test, or should the doctor with the training have to do that? You know, what value does an insurance company for profit provide? I mean, their whole goal, Eric, is to make sure that nothing goes out of that gallon of milk. And so at the end of the day, the CEO can get the $15 million. There's no value. Think about it. What is the value of an insurance company? If you all of a sudden, Eric, had crushing chest pain, your eyes started to roll up in your head, your face started to turn blue, would you call me Or would you call the CEO of your insurance company?
Well, I would call you, of course. And
yes.
I have.
All right. Yes. And you've called me for things about those of those nature. You just there really is no value that is provided. If you really think about it, I've never heard anyone give me a credible answer with respect to what is the value that an insurance company provides. And at the end, you heard what he was saying. Oh, it's supposed to minimize your risk so you protect your assets. So his version of a health insurance product is simply a big casino that you have to hope and cross your fingers and close your eyes. And, you know, I hope that I don't get sick because I'm have to put this money out. But if I get sick, I hope I bought the right coverage or the right product, because boy, if I didn't, I'm either going to be dead or bankrupt. I don't think that's what people want to want insurance to be. Is that what you want it to be?
No. And, you know, I have to deal with that regularly because of my health problems in the past. And I called the doctor today to get an appointment. Now you got to wait for a pre-auth.
Yeah, right. You got to, exactly. And it's a privately run program, right? There it is. All right, listen, I'm going to open up the Freedom Lines right now. You've heard for the first hour, the good doctor try to have an honest to God conversation with a conservative commentator who wants to defund Obamacare. And well, you heard it, so you know what it's all about. 1-866-987-THOM is the number. 1-866-987-8466. It's Anything Goes Friday. Bring it on Friday. So whatever you want to talk about is fair game with me. Okay, so let's go first to, let's say, Paul. Let's go to Paul on the line. He's listening in Woodinville, West Virginia, or is it Washington, on KBCS. Welcome, Paul.
Hi, Dr. Mike. I have to tell you, the first hour went way too long. It would seem like the first year. That guy, you couldn't talk triangles with him because he can't agree on point, line, plane. He can't
right.
agree on the definition. So, and this is the whole thing. I couldn't understand one thing that this guy, this and he's just like the rest of the country. What are they for? They want to... government health care is not really, Medicare is not totally government, private insurance is not totally private. There's so many things that he wouldn't accept a single question. I don't know. So, and the only thing I could get out of what he was for is he said that health care was better 50 years ago. Well, we're here now. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, if he doesn't want to accept any premises or any definitions, how can he compare health insurance to auto insurance? You can't.
And sushi bars.
You're talking about property versus your health. When your car is totaled, you get a new one. When your heart's totaled, it's not so easy that way.
Right.
You know,
right.
And that's the problem is saving your heart. It's not like changing your oil.
No.
The thing is that what he really was, I have to extrapolate here, but say that what he was really arguing is that insurance doesn't apply to health care. Okay, we know how much it costs to treat this country. We know what the incidence of disease are. Statistically, and we know what the cost of treating it is, so let's just all pay for it.
Right.
How's that?
Right. Well, look, the bottom line is this, Paul, and you're spot on here, because I really tried to distill it into very simple questions, and they weren't gotcha questions. I'm like, do you believe in an open network where patients can access any physician they want, or do you believe in closed networks where there are only a certain number of physicians that you can actually have, otherwise you pay, you know, an extra fee or a tax? That's not a hard question.
No, and can I say this, too? When I was listening to that, I don't think that's what most of us are all that worried about, is whether I'm not complaining that I can't see the doctor I want. I mean, there's only so many choices, and a doctor, I won't say a doctor's a doctor, but I don't think that's what most of us are complaining about, the cost. And he talked about insurance companies, let me mention this, operating on sliver-thin margins. Well, then why are we juxtaposing insurance companies with the drug companies, which are not, they're operating on 25-30% profits mm-hmm. every year for the last 50 years. So how does that work out?
Well, look, the other thing he was misleading about, though, Paul, too, is this, there's so much more I wanted to talk about, like you said, it went long enough. But the bottom line is this, if you look at the administration of the Medicare benefit, if you look at every dollar that's spent on Medicare, only 5 cents, that's all it costs to administer the Medicare benefit, 5 cents. If you look at private insurance companies, you can go anywhere from 15 to 25% just to administer the benefit, okay? And then
let's get back to the real point here is, what are they for? I can only think
right.
of two things that I can identify that I've heard. One is health savings accounts, which I don't know how you're supposed to save enough money to really deal with a problem. And if that's such a good idea, who do you think would sell you a health care mortgage?
Yeah.
No,
it's okay. All crazy.
The other thing is, And so who would, and the other thing is selling insurance across state lines, which means who's going to regulate that is the United States Congress, which is, I thought they were against that.
No, I hear you. Well, listen, I'm going to get the other callers, Paul. Appreciate your time here on the air. That opens up another Freedom Line, 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. Let's go to Tony, listening on WCPT. And Tony, welcome to the program.
Hello, Dr. Mike.
Hey, how are you?
Hello?
Yes, Tony, you're live on the Tom Hartman program.
Great. I have one thing to bring. A while back, my buddy said to me, he says, well, why do they oppose it? Why do the Republicans oppose it so much? So I got to thinking about it. And I believe that it's a combination of things like the government, proving the government can actually do things valuable to us or for us. But I think the biggest one in my eyes is that the employer now, right now, they have their foot right on your head. If you want to change jobs, you can't change jobs because you're stuck because you need insurance. So if you know, it's just one less stranglehold that they would have on you to keep you suppressed, basically, as an employee, you know, as an employee. And, you know, I have a union. I'm a union member, but most people don't have that luxury. And, you know, I believe that they're losing their stranglehold and they see it.
Well, of course they do, because ultimately what he was talking about was this whole system of a single-payer system, and that's really what the insurance companies fear the most, and that's why they begrudgingly decided to participate in these insurance exchanges, because if not, they knew that the government would basically control the exchanges, and then more and more people would – that would migrate people more and more towards a single-payer system. So begrudgingly, they've entered into these exchanges, but ultimately it begs the question that I asked earlier, Tony. What value does an insurance company provide to you? Would you rather me as your doctor care for you, or do you want the insurance company bureaucrat to basically take your premium, take 15-25% off the top, put that into the pockets of the CEOs who are making $15 million, $100 million. A guy from United makes $100 million a year. Do you think the guy who's running the ship at these big insurance companies should get paid $100 million? All of that money being taken out of the pool of insurance premiums, and then the doctors, you know, the ones who've trained and worked hard, and we're there for you on the front lines, making sure you don't get strokes and your limbs get amputated and you don't get heart attacks, and then we get the little breadcrumbs that come from after that? Is that the kind of system that we want in America? I would hope not. Well, listen, we'll be back with more of the Tom Hartman program. Stick with us right now. We got a lot of people on the line. Got Ron from Denver, Wayne from Granby, Massachusetts, Karen calling from South Carolina, Bruce in Georgia, Susan, Washington, Paul, Colorado, John, Minnesota. It's a national audience. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman program.
Dr. Mike sitting in for Tom Hartman, broadcasting from 1480 KPHX here in Phoenix, Arizona. Okay, welcome back to the Tom Hartman program and Tom's national audience, representing every nook and cranny and corner, Eric, of this great country called the United States of America. So without further ado, let's get to the callers, as they've been very patient holding on the line here. Let me see. Let's go to – God, I don't know which one – it's – you all look pretty interesting here. Let me go to – all right. I'm just going to go to
just
Karen.
One.
I'll just grab one. All right. Let's go to Karen. She's in Abbeville, South Carolina. Karen, welcome to the program.
Well, hi.
Hello.
Hi. How are you?
Every day's a blessing, Karen.
At my age, yes.
At any age. How old are you?
I'm in my 70s.
God bless you.
Yeah, thank you. And anyway, I'm glad you're a doctor. They do a lot of good.
Thank you. So, yeah, tell us your experience. You want to tell us about your experience? You actually have traditional Medicare, so let the audience know about your personal experience.
Well, my whole career was in the medical field, and working at a hospital with the insurance through the hospital, and to be taken care of, you had to be prior approved as to which group of doctors you wanted to see, what they could order, what you could have, when you could have it, and all that, you know. And I call that living under dictatorship. And
right.
Then when I get old enough, I go on Medicare, and that's USA Freedom.
Right, isn't it?
Any doctor I want, I don't have to go to the primary and be referred, which wastes time. You just go to the bone specialist or the ear, nose, throat specialist, whatever you need. And, yes, you have to have the proper supplementary that matches Medicare rules.
Right. But what you're saying is very important, Karen. I want people to understand this. You're in your 70s. You obviously have some medical issues. Give me just one example of a medical disease that you might have that you've had to go to a specialist for. I mean, did you have to go to – do you use an ear, nose, and throat specialist or a bone doctor?
Oh, I have, yes. Nothing major, you know, just
But what you but what you're
not,
saying though at
being in pollen or dirty air.
Right. But what you're saying though is the following, Karen, is that if you wanted to go see a bone doctor about a bone issue, you would simply pick up the phone, call, and make that appointment. And you wouldn't have to get any authorization, no approval, no nothing. You would just do that, correct?
Right.
Under traditional Medicare.
Yeah.
Versus the old system where you had like a private insurance company, you'd have to call the office and then what? Get an approval?
You have to go to the primary, get an approval set up, and a referral from your primary, and then
wait till it gets approved, and then once it got approved, then you have to wait to get an appointment. So it could be weeks or months before you actually got what you wanted, right?
Yeah. And one thing I always like to look at something funny. When somebody, and their companies are called people now, when somebody is telling the doctor and the patient what they can do, what they can have, where they can have it, when, if, whatever, I want to see that person's license, medical license.
Amen. Amen, Karen, because guess what? They don't have a license. They're telling me how to practice and telling me what I can or cannot do with you, my patient. That's the insurance bureaucrat interfering directly with the doctor-patient relationship. Karen, thank you so much for calling in, and God bless you. Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye. All right, that's Karen calling in from Abbeville, South Carolina. So there you have it. Look, he's saying I created straw arguments and this and that. Here's
everything you said was straw, Mike.
Right, but was that a straw patient then, right there?
Yes.
Was she part of the...
And you're a straw doctor because you love Medicare.
Sounds like the Wizard of Oz. We're the straw men. You know, it's crazy. I mean, this is a real patient calling up. She's in her 70s. She's got medical problems. And she's telling you, the listening audience, the public at large, that, look, under traditional Medicare, I have freedom. I have liberty. I can call the doctor. I can make an appointment. I don't need pre-authorization. I don't need mother may I. And Eric, it goes back to my analogy with a gallon of milk. The reason they make pre-authorization is because they want to make sure they put up blocks, roadblocks.
Make it as hard as possible. Maybe you'll just go away.
Right. No, that's true. Sometimes that people get so frustrated and they don't know what to do. Look, don't think that that's not intentional what they do. I've had my own in-laws who are in their 80s, okay, who needed access to pretty urgent medical care. My father-in-law was actually having lots of nausea and vomiting. You've met my father-in-law.
Yes.
You know, Panchito.
I remember when that was happening.
Yeah, Francisco.
Is he okay now?
He's fine now, but he was having this nausea and vomiting. He was losing weight, and basically exactly what happened. He's on an HMO product, and he needed to, one, go see his primary doctor first. Two, after he would see his primary doctor, he would need a referral to go to a specialist, and then that would have to get approved. And then after that was approved, he would have to wait to get the actual appointment.
Right.
And scheduled for the special. So here he was, Eric. He's 80 years old, nausea, vomiting.
Suffering,
losing weight, okay? And I had to intercede because, you know, I'm not going to watch my father-in-law die before my eyes here.
Right.
Right?
I mean, absolutely.
I guess
I wouldn't either.
I wouldn't either. So I got on the phone with his office, and I said, look, he saw the primary care doctor. They recommended a gastroenterologist, a specialist. And they said, oh, no, we have to get the approval first. And then I said, wait a second. I'm a physician. I'm an internist. My father-in-law is withering away before me, before my eyes. I'm watching him wither away. I'm watching him vomit. I'm watching him lose weight. He's seen the primary care doc. He needs to go to the specialist. You don't need an approval. The doctor, your primary care doctor said he needs to see the specialist. So why does he need an approval? Right?
Well, like you would say roadblock.
So anyway, I was able to kind of sort of expedite that, which was a day or two. So here he's still having to have this nausea and vomiting and still not eating and losing weight. But then finally they get to the specialist, and then the specialist says they need to do what's called an endoscopy. You know, you go through your esophagus, right, and you go down and you look inside to see if you have any ulcers or whatnot. But she said then she had to get that approved. So she's the specialist now who's seen the patient and says he needs an EGD, an endoscopy. Then she's got to get approval.
That's insane.
To get that done from the insurance company. I'll tell you what happened when we get back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Dr. Mike Newcomb, sitting in for Tom, and just give us a call. There's no pre-approval. We'll get you right through into the phone. Okay, welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, the Freedom Lines are open at 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. So anyway, finishing up this story, and I'm going to get to the callers, all right? So then my poor father-in-law now has gone through the primary doc. He's gone to the specialist. Now the specialist has to get approval to do an actual EGD, a procedure, which is ridiculous. I mean, that's the specialist. That's the expert that you sent the person to get the thing done.
Why does she need permission?
Right, exactly. So now I call the office and they tell me, no, good news. We got the approval. I'm like, awesome. Okay. When can he come in? 10 days from now. Are you kidding me?
So you got him in quicker, didn't you?
Well, yeah, but so now it's approved. But here's a guy, 80 years old, nausea, vomiting, losing weight, gets the approval. Now, I'm already almost a week or so into this, and this is me bird-dogging it as a physician. You know, and then I said, look, this is completely unacceptable. I said, if the insurance company wants my father-in-law to go to the hospital and get admitted and pay tens of thousands of dollars for the care that he could have gotten if he just got the procedure done, I'm more than happy to get him in the car right now, take him down there, and spend tens of thousands of your dollars because of your inefficiency. And see, the sad thing is, Eric, that if I wasn't there for my in-laws,
he would have suffered through all of it.
He would have, because that's the kind of man he is. He probably just thinks, you know, oh, that's the way it goes, and I got to be patient, and, you know, I'll just keep having nausea and vomiting and weight loss, and that's the way it is. He wouldn't have fought it. So we finally get him in, and he gets to see the doctor. He gets the procedure done, and they find nothing, and I say that in quotation marks, okay? They do the scope, and they didn't find anything. Well, lo and behold, turns out about a week later, I get a call. I was actually taking my normal bubble bath. You know, I like the bubble baths. I'm in the bubble bath, and we get a call from my mother-in-law that my father-in-law was passing bright red blood through his rectum, you know, and a lot. And so I knew at that point it was either a complication of the procedure or something else didn't get found when they did the procedure. I rush over there. I'm not kidding you. Big pools of blood, look like jellyfish.
I mean, I know that feeling.
I mean, yeah, well, you know that. Huge pools of blood. I mean, he looked white. He was ashen. You know, it was just – I was scared to death of him because I knew he was bleeding out. He basically was exsanguinating. When you see bright red blood coming from your rectum in big clots like that, that means that you're bleeding. You're bleeding briskly. It's like something's gushing on the inside. So we call 911, and then 911 gets there, and – my father-in-law is like, you know, basically almost like coding there. I mean, he's like going in and out of consciousness, and they're trying to ask him like questions like, sir, how old are you? What's your birthday?
I know, just put him in the ambulance and get him to the hospital.
Like, didn't you see the damn blood over there?
Ask his family these questions.
Right, you can ask afterwards. And I'm telling the 911, I have to intercede there. I said, look, I'm a doctor. The guy's bleeding out. He's got no blood pressure. He's white and he's half unconscious, and you're asking him a history and physical question. I said, just get him in the van, get him in the ambulance and take him down there. So at that point, they took him down there, and he goes down to the hospital, and in the emergency room, they start putting in the large bore IVs, they start resuscitating him, getting stat blood, called in another specialist at this point, and it turned out they had to scope him again, and he had what was called a Cameron ulcer. They missed it the first time. It's actually an ulcer that you have, and they missed it, and over time, over the next ensuing week or two, whatever it was, it just bursted, it eroded into a blood vessel, and the blood vessels just start spurting out. So he basically, had we not been there and got that thing rolling again at that time, he would be dead today. There's no question in my mind. He would have bled out, and he'd be dead. Thank God we got him into the hospital, and to this day, he's, you know, doing well. He's thriving. He's like 85 years old. You know, I get a little teary-eyed, man, thinking about it, but it's you know, it was a tough time for us. It was a very tough time.
Yeah, I remember when that was happening.
Yeah, I mean, but that's our healthcare system, Eric, in a nutshell. That's the private insurance healthcare system that put up every damn roadblock and barrier to my dear father-in-law so that he would not access the system and that ounces of milk would not go out of that gallon so that the insurance bureaucrats can keep all that money, keep the shareholders satisfied, keep their investors satisfied, pay the dividends at the expense of my father-in-law dying an ugly death, bleeding to death on his sofa in his home.
They'd rather have you pay funeral expenses than for them to have to pay out.
Right, absolutely. Right. They would have, you know what? They would have rather him died on the couch because then he wouldn't have accessed the hospital where they have to pay the hospital bills now. It would have been much better for them to have him die in that household, you know, an ugly death, because from a financial perspective, it was a win-win for them, right? Deny the care.
Absolutely.
Don't do the procedure. And if he dies before he gets the procedure done, guess what? We don't have to pay the funeral expenses, and we don't have to pay the hospital.
They don't know you personally. Why do they care?
No. I mean, that is it in a nutshell. That's the healthcare system that we have under the private insurance sector, the for-profit sector, I should add, and versus the government-run system where you don't have these roadblocks and these barriers to care. All right, listen, let's get back to some of the other people here. Let's go to Susan. Susan happens to think that Obamacare is a Ponzi scheme. I can't wait to hear this. She's been waiting an hour and 15 minutes, and hopefully she'll answer questions unlike the guest that we had at the top of the first hour. So, Susan, welcome to the program.
Yes, Dr. Newcomb, Dr. Mike. I've got four bullet points, and I'll go quick, and I won't raise my voice just to let you know that I'm uncertain of my opinion, and by talking loud, my opinion will come through.
Yeah, I love how you use the word bullet, though. Of course, it has to be a bullet point, not just a point, right? You have to throw the word bullet
in there. NAMU, if I'm not mistaken, it's not truly notions of medical underwriting. It's the National Medical of Underwriting.
I never heard of NAMU. I thought that was a whale. I don't know. Or was that SHAMU?
We'll skip over that. SHAMU. Anyhow, it's when you're keeping your record keeping of the clients. That's why I can't get mental health. That's why I can't get an internist. Yet I am a patient and medical advocate. And bully for you that you were such a strong man to be able to articulate and advocate for your father-in-law, because that is very critical when someone is ill. And the points I want to make why it is a Ponzi scheme to begin with, insurance, like any life insurance, any insurance basically is a casino where you're for more riskier people to make a pool of people to alleviate some of the risk. Yet if the 27-year-olds, the 30-year-olds, and the 40-somethings are not truly healthy or can't afford it or not employed, we're not going to have this casino game running very long. And the other part...
All right, well, that's your one point. So let me talk about your first point. So I agree with you that it is a casino, that it is gambling, and it's all about risk stratification, which is why if you've looked at historically, Susan, the way that the system set up in the private insurance market, it's been stacked against the patient, because that's why they have denied people on pre-existing conditions, because they wanted to already pre-select out the population who was healthy and well and say, hey, give us your money. Give us all of your money. We'll do your health insurance. As long as you're healthy, you don't have any diseases, we'll make sure, you know, we cover you. Well, that's a slam dunk for anybody. You and I could set a company up like that and make millions of dollars. But that's the whole point with Obamacare, why it's not a Ponzi scheme, because it doesn't allow insurance companies to discriminate and select out only healthy people. You cover everybody.
No, they do. They do have each their own articulation of what is going to be considered. If you watch it on a high-def TV, you will see that Humana, the ARP, the other one.
Why do you have to watch it on a high-def TV? What's the difference?
You can see the underwriting where it says if you have end-stage renal or you have actual cancer, which comes up on the Medicare Advantage. The Medicare Advantage.
Yeah, but that's the private insurance companies.
One, which is the 1-800-BLUE, the 810-BLUE for what had been the Primera Blue, now it's a spinoff of Regis.
Right, but Susan, you're agreeing with everything.
Those, domestic violence will alleviate both my husband and myself off the plane, because obviously someone's going to get hurt.
But you're agreeing. You're agreeing with everything that I said. So the Medicare Advantage programs are privately run insurance companies that discriminate against people based off of pre-existing conditions. And they're saying that if you have X, Y, and Z, we're not going to cover you. Or if we do cover you, guess what? We're going to exact a nice, healthy tax so that you're going to have to pay higher premiums. Listen, I appreciate everything you're saying. I got to get to the other callers here, though. There's a lot of people waiting right now. And I know you were waiting for an hour, so I wanted to get you in and give you a few minutes on the air. All right. 1-866-987-THOM is the number. 1-866-987-8466. Let's see. Let's go to who do we want to go to next here, Eric? I should go to who's been holding the longest here. Let's go to Wayne. Let's go to Wayne. He's holding from Granby, Massachusetts on WHMP. Welcome, Wayne.
Hi, Dr. Mike. It's great to talk to you.
Likewise.
I have what they laughingly call RomneyCare, because he had nothing to do with it, but they named it after him. And, of course, President Obama had used his plan as part of the cornerstone for the Affordable Health Care Act. But the gentleman you had on, was his name Edmund Wright?
C. Edmund Wright. I'd really see Edmund wrong, but C. Edmund Wright.
He said something that made me stand up. He said, well, you know, that if the pre-existing condition is nothing but welfare, and hospitals, of course, have to treat you, which is not always – that must be fairly recent, because that wasn't always the case. But I had to go in the hospital before I actually got on RomneyCare, and I'm still looking at a bill that's well over $1,000, and I'm on disability, and, of course, I haven't got it. So you can – I'd love to live on how much that bill is.
Right. But I'll tell you
that.
I thought that was so callous when he said that that is welfare, because, like I tried to give the example, look, just because somebody's got high blood pressure doesn't mean they're going to have a stroke, doesn't mean they're going to have a heart attack, doesn't mean they're going to have adverse consequences from that. It just means that it's been identified as a problem and it needs to be treated. And if you don't have access to health care, then it will deteriorate and you'll have horrible things. But what the insurance companies simply do is they say, you got high blood pressure, so this is a casino, and guess what? According to our betting odds, the chance are something's going to go wrong somewhere down the road. So guess what? We're not going to cover you. Or if we are going to cover you, we're going to make you pay, you know, to extract a pound of flesh. That's wrong. It's wrong. It's immoral. It's just using people and their sickness and illness to make a profit off of. And that's disgusting. I'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Dr. Mike sitting in for Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, an open network where anybody can call in. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. It's Anything Goes Friday. Bring it on Friday. We've got a lot of callers in the queue. We're going to get to you. Stay patient, but we do have our special guest at this segment, Victoria Jones with Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, welcome to the program. Let me get her in here. How you doing, Victoria?
I'm very well, thank you. Yourself?
Oh, we're doing well. We're doing well. We're having a robust discussion today about Obamacare and why conservatives want to defund it. But I digress. Tell us what's happening in the world at large.
Yes. Well, don't get me started on Obamacare. Don't get me started on the Maryland Health Connections nosiness when I tried to get through security. Don't get me going.
All right.
Okay. But I did register. So
excellent.
I did. Well, very interesting here in Washington, D.C. Everybody's on tenterhooks because there are deals being discussed, and there's a vote probably tomorrow in the Senate. The Senate vote tomorrow is Senate Democrats are likely to hold a vote tomorrow to raise the debt ceiling. It's likely to fail because they need 6 Republicans to cross the aisle and join them.
Hmm.
Probably not going to get it.
That's unfortunate.
But they probably won't, particularly since there are deals in the works. The president now has met with House Republicans, House Democrats, Senate Republicans, and Senate Democrats. Most recently today, he met with Senate Republicans. Yesterday, he met with House Republicans. Both groups have got deals for him. And he's mulling them. Currently, the White House press briefing is going on. Jay Carney is reacting to the different deals. Now, the House Republican deal does raise the debt ceiling. It ends the government shutdown, and it sets up 6 weeks of budget talks. And that's the problem with it, according to the White House. It's too short.
Right, right. So the president rejected that already, did he not, as far as the six-week window to just
Jay Carney seems to be in the middle of doing that right now.
Okay, okay.
Indirectly, but he appears to be doing that. Senate Republicans have a deal that is a little convoluted and has many moving parts. It was put together by Senator Susan Collins of Maine, a centrist, and so it's still in the works, but it would raise the debt ceiling it would reopen the government for between 6 months and a year. That's much more to the White House's liking and to the Senate's liking. They don't want to revisit this in 6 weeks.
No, and that doesn't give a lot of confidence to the economic markets, doesn't it?
No, they don't want to deal with this a few days before they go and cook turkeys at Thanksgiving.
Right, right. Unbelievable. What are we hearing? What are we hearing with respect to the government shutdown? I mean, that's the debt ceiling crisis. What about this government shutdown?
Well, basically, at the moment, they're tying the two in together. So the deals are that we will do this and we will do that. But it looks like it's possible. I don't want to turn into Madam Victoria wearing a turban with a crystal ball, but it looks like it's possible that some kind of deal could coalesce over the weekend. Congress is working this weekend. It will work Columbus Day. There may be votes in the House tonight, tomorrow, Columbus Day. It's possible that talks will certainly continue. It's possible that some kind of deal will happen. An initial deal, I would think, closer to the Senate Republicans, even though there are bits in that deal that the White House doesn't like that have to do with repealing the medical device tax.
Let me ask you this. Why is that such a big thing for the conservatives? I mean, for crying out loud, these medical device companies talk about operating margins. They're doing quite well with respect to profits. Is this just, you know, they want to throw them a bone and that's it? Or are they going to remain steadfast?
One, because the Senate's actually already voted to repeal it, mm-hmm. bipartisan. So it would, in theory, a lot of the politicians don't really like it, although it does bring in money to fund Obamacare. They just don't like it very much. And so it, in theory, it's something that could be got rid of, but it would involve the president shifting a little bit on no touching of Obamacare.
Right.
But because it does bring in money to fund the health care law, would it need to be offset
with something else?
That's a question.
And that's something I don't think they're going to want to yield on as far as the people on the right side of the aisle.
Exactly.
Or the wrong side of the aisle.
Exactly.
But, all right, what else we got?
Well, I'll just tell you one of the effects of this. The National Transportation Safety Board Chairwoman Deborah Hersman testified today before a Senate committee. She said the NTSB has furloughed almost all of its employees, going from 405 employees to 22.
Wow.
She said they've suspended work on over 1,000 investigations in all modes of transportation. She said just in the 10 days that have passed, 14 accidents have occurred in which they haven't dispatched investigators, including an 8-fatal bus crash in Tennessee, a 4-fatal aviation accident in Arizona, and a worker fatality on Washington's metro system. And in fact, I just heard about another accident that occurred in West Virginia just this afternoon that involved a fatality. They've also had to delay completing investigations into the crash of the Asiana Airlines airplane in San Francisco earlier this year and the Metro North Commuter Railway accident in New York City. So, I mean, this is just, it's extraordinary, the things that you don't necessarily think about.
It's frightening. Now, what's happening with respect to the furloughed workers? I heard something out there that they might actually get back pay when they return. Is that something that's a done deal or being proposed? What's happening?
That law has been passed. That is a done deal. Now, some lawmakers, Republicans, are regretting doing it, but that is a done deal. That is passed. Nevertheless, we're almost through one pay period now, and furloughed workers are really struggling. Some are taking out loans. Some are trying to get work as baristas, doing things like that.
Right.
Try and make ends meet. They're talking to creditors, trying to juggle bills. There's a very interesting piece in today's Washington Post about how incredibly hard it is for people, a lot of people living paycheck to paycheck who
right.
are federal workers.
Yeah, that seems especially cruel, Victoria, that, yeah, we'll pay you once we reopen, but in the meanwhile, you know, you're on your own, sink or swim, go bankrupt. All right, listen, Victoria, as always, thank you from Talk Radio News Service. We always appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Okay, listen, Dr. Mike here. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. We got the Freedom Lines packed right now, 1-866-987-THOM. There are no further guests for the rest of the remaining hour when we get back, so we'll be talking directly to you, the listening audience.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman Program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. EdisonFactor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, welcome back. The government might be shut down, Eric, but not the Tom Hartman Program.
No, nothing can stop the Tom Hartman Program.
Absolutely. There will never be a shutdown of the Tom Hartman Program, as far as we're concerned.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right. But let me get this straight. So we shut down the government. We don't let these people work, these government workers.
Correct.
But they get paid anyway.
Right. Talk about government waste, right? I mean, their whole thesis is that government waste. So they lay them all, or they furlough them. They can't do any of the work that's required with respect to their paycheck. But we're going to pay anyway. If we shut down for a month or 2 months or a year, you're still going to get your pay.
Why not just let them work?
Right. Well, but listen to what Victoria Jones said, though, Eric. I mean, it's so sad because these people, many of them are living paycheck to paycheck.
I know.
You know? I mean, look, I have my own family members I know live paycheck to paycheck.
I'm sure you don't get rich on a government job.
No, but the point is that it's callous, it's cruel to say that we're going to pay you, but in the meanwhile, you know, you sink or swim. You know, people could go bankrupt. Their credit ratings can be affected. They could be kicked out of their homes, their apartments. They could have their foreclosure on their property, on their cars. I mean, it just, and all the while, the congressmen and women who've shut down the government, they get their pay. They get their health care. They get their benefits.
Of course.
I mean, come on. That's not what America's about. That's not what our founding fathers envisioned in this country. Look, you got to find compromise. I mean, stop putting people at the point of a gun. Stop putting the president and the congressional Democrats and saying, look, it's our way or the highway. And if we don't get it, we're going to default on all our financial obligations. We're going to shut down the government. We're going to furlough people. We're going to put them out of a job. We're going to make them live paycheck to paycheck until you defund the law that, one, was passed democratically in the Senate, in the House, signed into law by the president,
and
stamp
of
approval
by
the Supreme Court. And then Mitt Romney ran on the whole premise to repeal and defund Obamacare and lost. And you're still holding the American people hostage with this thing. And they tried to repeal it how many times in Congress?
I think it's like up to 42 or something.
40-something times, and it costs millions of dollars to have to go through this useless exercise of wasting the American people's taxpayer dollars. I mean, and when you look at the polls, Eric, the polls are confirming time and time again, as the further this goes on, the longer this goes on, the GOP is falling into further and further, more and more disrepute, that the American people are disproportionately saying, look, get your act together, Republican Party, because if you don't, come this next election cycle, you're going to be the minority party for that next election cycle, and you might become the minority party for a generation to come if you continue up with this ridiculousness.
Absolutely.
So, unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right, listen, let's get back to the callers. This guy's been holding, I don't know, guy or girl, it's an empty screen. line number one, an hour and 37 minutes.
It's the old software, Mike. You got to catch up and use the new software.
There you
That's
go.
What I was told.
Well, you're live on the air. Who are you?
This is Armin.
Armin?
Your old buddy in Florida.
All right, Armin, what's happening?
I'm in Bradenton, Florida, and if I may, please, let me first compliment you. You overhauled that guy in a big way, and every time you legitimately boxed him in with your question, specifically the way you did it, he had the supposition of your question because he knew he was boxed in intellectually and he would fail in his communication for the people out there so that they would understand that this guy and his straw man, Jesus, you know, this guy at Halloween must run around putting up straw men, you know, for decorations, because he used that argument so repetitiously. I guess that's their talking points they train him to use. If you can't win fair and square and answer the questions, you just reframe the question and take it into this intellectual cyberspace where there's no infinite answer. And then that confuses the people that are listening. So then you don't get to make your legitimate point. You, the doctor.
Right. Well, that's why I said, I mean, he wouldn't do very well in an SAT question test, because everything
really,
he would question the premise of the question.
Forever.
I don't believe in triangles have three sides. I reject that premise. So
right,
anyway.
Absolutely. Anyway, I think in my opinion that this guy's a paid corporate fraud. And let me give you a few facts, if I may, please. First off, if you compare the medical malpractice due to the delivery system, like the private versus, you know, with insurance companies versus Medicare, the insurance companies, because basically insurance companies are running a racket, and what they're doing is they're basically corporate rationed health care. They get a pot of money, and the more they can screw the people from getting the care they need, the more profits they can take up. And then he likes to use that word straw man, so we'll use his word. So then they put that straw argument out there. Well, we're only making a thin veneer of 3%, which is absolutely a fraud, because the way the tax system works, those huge corporations, health insurance companies included, can go out and buy equity by the massive scale and deduct that off their cost as off their income for the year, and it can make them look like they're just barely getting by when they're buying the whole friggin' country and all these other businesses and corporations and
absolutely
them in the big. So I mean, it's a scam. And another thing, let me say this, if I may, also.
Yeah, just make one more point there, so we get the other ones on. But I'll let you make your final point. Go ahead.
Well, it's a double combined one. It's a synergetic point. And the synergetic point is, I don't know what the Republicans are up to, but in Bradenton and Sarasota, Florida, they're raising the taxes. They're raising the fees. They're the predominant parties in Bradenton and Sarasota. They're raising the taxes and the fees. They're giving their friends and family that work for government real nice pay raises. And they're raising the taxes and fees. And they're supposed to be the conservatives. So I think they had this all planned to take the tracks of Obamacare and the implementation date that's now in the last few weeks
and take
that railroad track off. But the point here I want to make, without meandering one or too much, and I really listen to you, you're a very brilliant man, and the point here is there's a huge difference. Okay, profits have their place in our society. We don't need the profit incentive anymore in healthcare because it's leaving too many people without care, that money.
I agree. Listen, Armin, let's end on that, Armin. Let's end on that, because I agree. Putting profits before people, particularly when it comes to your health and your wellness, I agree 100%. It's well said. I just want to get to the other callers, too, because we got tons of people on the line at 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466. But we do appreciate your call, Armin. So let's go next to Bruce. Bruce is in Atlanta, Georgia, and he's listening on FSTV, Free Speech TV. So, Bruce, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Dr. Newcomb. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Quick comment and a question. Props and kudos for you for putting that C. Edmund Wright moron in his place. He had no idea what he was talking about. The second that he made a mistake explaining what a, what was it, Medicare Advantage plan was, the rest of his argument imploded. He brought a knife to a gunfight. I was surprised he would actually debate a licensed physician as yourself on this matter.
Right. I don't think he understood that, so.
Say that again?
No, I agree with you. I don't think he kind of understood what he was getting into, and he just kept sort of throwing out there, straw man this, I reject your premise that, and he really didn't make a lot of sense, did he?
No, I didn't think so. As I said, the minute he was wrong on that, it brought into question the rest of his argument. It imploded. It's like, well, I'm sorry that the folks that generally look to him for information did not hear him. He felt he sounded so confident and did not hear him. Maybe they didn't second guess themselves about listening to him in the future when it comes to getting any kind of accurate information.
No, I agree. Listen, Bruce, we're coming up on the end of the segment here, but you did have a question about if they changed the enrollment deadline.
Did they move the I heard on the news. Did they move the enrollment deadline to February from the end of March?
Not that I heard, but we'll double check that for you by the end of the show and get back to you. Okay, so thank you so much, Bruce.
Thank you very much, Dr. Newsom.
Thank you, sir. It's Bruce from Atlanta, Georgia. We're going to be back with the callers in a second. Stay tuned.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's Anything Goes, Bring It on Friday on the Tom Hartman Program. So bring it. Okay, welcome back. Let's get right back to the Freedom Lines. Let's go to Dave, who's been holding quite some time, too, from WCPT. Dave, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, I actually just want to address some of the extreme inaccuracy in when you guys were describing the benefits of a private healthcare system over a public one.
I said the opposite. I didn't say private benefits over the public.
You guys are saying that a public healthcare system is better, and then you started listing all this anecdotal evidence that has no bearing on fact. And,
well, it's not anecdotal, Dave. It's not anecdotal when I actually am a healthcare provider for 20 years and participate in the healthcare system as a physician. So you could say it's anecdotal, but it's not anecdotal. I don't live in a matrix, okay? I actually happen to live in the real live world and deal with real live patients. So I reject your premise that it's anecdotal.
It's a straw argument.
It's a straw argument, I say.
Okay. So it's okay. Let me give you the actual argument. You guys went into all this basically lies about how the American healthcare system has tons of delays and you have to wait an extremely long time for approvals and things like that, when in fact every single study ever done that has any credibility from both the U.S. and from several other countries, Canada, the U.K., France, regarding waiting times in healthcare systems show that we have the shortest waiting times of any country and the smallest percentage of people who wait a very long time.
So what if it's the shortest? That's like saying, okay, it takes 3 months in Canada to get an office visit, but in the United States, it only takes 2 months. So we're the shortest. But it still takes long is what I'm telling you. It still takes an inordinate amount of time to get an appointment. So are you happy with that, that instead of 3 months, it takes 2 months?
According to a Canadian study, according to several Canadian studies, actually, they have three or four times the number of people that have to wait 4 or more weeks to get to a specialist, which underlies another major benefit of our current system.
And Dave, do you also know that Canada ranks in the top 10 countries every year for the happiest people in the world? Why are they so happy? It seems like you're more concerned about them having to wait than they are, because they're always one of the 10 happiest countries in the world. Why is that?
Are we discussing happiness here, or are we discussing healthcare? Because I think that there's absolutely something to be said about Canadian culture that makes them happier. I don't think that we have a very healthy culture in America, but I do think we have a superior healthcare system where we have better survival rates for almost every kind of cancer, better accessibility to every kind of specialist.
Shorter life expectancies. We have shorter life expectancies. We spend way more money than any other industrialized country out there. It's not even close. You know, we have higher infant mortality rates in a lot of the countries. So it's not as peachy keen as everybody thinks it is. But let me ask you this, Dave. What do you think about the private health insurance system that's superior, say, to the government? Because that was the whole premise of today's debate on government-funded health care, Obamacare, versus private insurance. So you tell me what you think is better and why, and then we're going to move on.
Sure. Basically, the benefit of a private health care system where private industry gets to pay for it and the government isn't involved is effectively choice. And I know you guys are going to go into the whole exchanges, and that gives you choice. What I'm talking about is a choice of benefits from different kinds of technologies. If the government gets involved in healthcare, and this happens in every country where the government gets involved in healthcare, a public system chooses to incentivize certain things like primary care. What happens then is, like in Canada, you have a critical shortage of specialists, you have a critical shortage of development in medication, in medical technologies, and it's not that you can point and say, oh, this is the one benefit. But overall, a system like ours gives us more access to more and better technologies that can help us. Now, you're going to go ahead and say that Americans have a shorter lifespan, and yes, that's true, but that has nothing to do with the fact that we somehow have some inherently worse healthcare system. It has to do with lifestyle choices in America that are completely unrelated to healthcare. It has to do with that we, by a huge margin, eat more fast food, eat more fatty foods, don't exercise as much, don't go out as much as people in any other country. We take cars instead of bikes. Some people in European countries, people walk and bike far more often than we do, and that's what causes.
Well, I don't disagree with you on that premise. I mean, I would agree with you on that premise, but I do disagree with you, and I'm going to get going, but I'm going to let you know for sure. In the private sector, they have closed networks, and the reason they do this, okay, and it's very apparent. I've been practicing for 20 plus years. The reason they close the networks is because they want to pit doctor against doctor. See, in a real free market, i.e. the Medicare traditional government-run program, any doctor can sign up. As long as you're in good standing, you can sign up, and you can compete on your services. I can compete on my bedside manner, on my intellectual superiority, or the way that I practice medicine. But in the private-run system, they say, guess what? If you don't play by our rules, then we're cutting you out of the picture. And then that means you have no access to the market, no access to those patients. That's not the way a free market's supposed to work. You shouldn't have private insurances dictating what doctors can or cannot play the game and then curtailing the network for patients. Do you think that's right to do, Dave, in a free market?
No, I'll absolutely agree with you on this point. There are some very positive reforms that can be made, including opening up markets and regulating for more competition.
But I can't do that. I mean, in today's system, I can't do that as a doctor in the private insurance sector, because the private insurance sector chooses which doctors are on their network and which aren't. And oftentimes what they do, Dave, I'll tell you, this is honest to God what they do. They'll look at your spending, basically. They'll look at every doctor. They won't look at quality outcomes, but they'll look at the doctors in their network and they'll say, hey, Dr. X, most of his patients go to the hospital and we end up spending, $2 million a year on his patients for hospital fees, even though those patients might have needed the hospital and they were sick. But what they'll do is they'll deselect you out of the network as a doctor because you're costing them too much money. It has nothing to do with the quality of your care. It has nothing to do with your expertise. It has nothing to do with your bedside manner. Don't you see that's what they do? They do that so that they don't have to take money out of the cookie jar and put it into the pockets of the doctors or the hospitals. They want to keep as much money as they can in their pockets. And that's wrong. That's what a closed network does. They make the network as small as possible with the doctors who historically have, less outlay per member per month. And I would hope you wouldn't agree with that kind of healthcare system, Dave. But in any case, listen, we got to get moving. We're going to move on right now. The Freedom Lines are open at 1-866-987-THOM. That's 1-866-987-8466.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Dr. Mike Newcomb sitting in for Tom Hartman, and you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Okay, welcome back. Let's go to Minneapolis, Minnesota, with John on the line from Free Speech TV. John, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that, to answer your question about what value insurance companies bring to patient care, I think they bring absolutely no value at all. And in fact, if we were taking that money and spending it on patients, our statistics would be as good as France, as good as Canada, as good as a lot of these other countries. The world has decided that single-payer health care is the way to go. Public health care, whether it's direct or through nonprofit insurance companies like in Switzerland, that's the way it should be, because it's cheaper and it's better. And, you know, this argument just does not get any press in this country, because basically it, you know, the other side, everything, the right wing, it's ideologically driven. They know darn well that that kind of healthcare system is far superior and much more successful, and people would be much happier. But it just doesn't go along with their ideologically driven ideas. Even in 1979, 1980, there was a huge discussion in the UK to privatize their healthcare system, just like, Margaret Thatcher privatized everything else, and she was, very right-wing, compared to anybody that they ever had as prime minister up until that point. And, they had over 30 years of their own public healthcare system. And, you know, when they really looked at how, what the expenses were, what we pay here for administrative costs,
sure,
and what they pay there, it was something like 3 to 8% in the UK, as opposed to something like a third in this country at that time. It was about 80, 81. It was, in the Guardian. I read this article many, many years ago.
Sure.
And that's what really changed my opinion about healthcare. And I also practice, I'm a respiratory therapist.
Uh-huh.
I practice here in Minneapolis, St. Paul area for over 20 some odd years now, 22 years to be exact. And I've yet to take care of one disgruntled Canadian who came down here
right.
to get their healthcare here in Minnesota. And we
sure.
have relatively good healthcare. And if we had a single payer or a care system where we had real choice, I myself could go to the Mayo Clinic. As it is now,
right.
I have to go to my own healthcare system, and as much as I like my colleagues and people that I work with there and the physicians, there are things that they can do at the Mayo Clinic that they just can't do
sure.
for me at my own healthcare system.
No, I agree. They basically rigged the system. But one thing that you mentioned about as far as the overhead and whatnot, one of the things the Affordable Care Act did do was say that, listen, if you are going to participate in this program, you have to spend a certain amount of money of your premiums per year on the patient. So in other words, they can't just take 30% off the top now. They have to,
right.
they have to pay, I think, up to like at least 85 or 90% of the premiums that come in have to be used in delivering healthcare services. See, for years,
yeah.
insurance companies got away with that. They would skim 25% off the top, and then you got even less money left over because that went into the pockets of the CEOs and the chief financial officer and all the other, top brass.
Yeah.
You know, basically.
I think Obamacare is a step forward, and I myself would benefit if I had to leave my place of employment. I would not have to go and seek private insurance, and it would be probably less than half. I've already checked into it under Minnesota.
No doubt.
Minnesota Care. So.
All right, well, listen, let me get running here. I really appreciate your time on the air today, so thanks for calling in.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
All right, that's John calling up from Minnesota, opening up another Freedom Line at 1-866-987-TOM, T-H-O-M. Okay, let's go back to a few other questions here. Let's say somebody wanted to talk about the earlier debate. That was Mike, I think. Let's go to Mike on WCPT. He's calling in.
Yes,
Mike, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I actually wanted to address one comment first before my question about the earlier debate. When he was talking about lifestyles, better lifestyles in the other countries, some of that is driven by financial incentives to the doctors for better outcomes.
Sure.
So that's one reason, and I don't know what the finance, if there are any such things for doctors here.
But see, some insurance companies do incentivize doctors based off of outcomes, but for the most part, like I told you, the real gist of it is that they fragment the doctors, they pit the doctors against one another, and they look at the amount of money the doctors spend per patient, per month, per year, and those doctors who are outliers or don't fit into the financial mold, they're dropped from the network, and then basically they pick up the other doctors. Look, it's an end run around the whole concept of denying people based off a pre-existing condition, because if you can deny people who have pre-existing conditions, you're going to make sure that you have a better pool of patients. They're more healthy. So now if you say, okay, well, they caught me doing that. So now guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to take the doctor who has all those patients with pre-existing condition, who's costing a lot of money, and I'm just not going to let that doctor in my network. So what you've done is an end run around that kind of rule by deselecting that doctor out of your network. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Right, which actually brings me to my question. When you were asking about, or you were given the choice of having the mother may I question,
correct?
Is that question directed only to general health care, or does that actually extend to severe surgery that may be required?
Oh, well, it extends to everything. The private insurance health companies can question every single thing.
Specifically, I mean, don't you need to get – what I'm asking is, do you need to get any type of approval for, a real invasive surgery?
No. Under the Medicare traditional system?
Yes.
Not that I'm aware of. No, I think you could, if you go to see a surgeon and your surgeon says, hey, you know, guess what, Mike? You got, you know, a gallbladder problem. Your gallbladder needs to come out. Surgeon puts that on, you know, the schedule, gets you there, and you're done. Versus the private insurance company, yeah, you got to jump through a bunch of hoops before that's approved.
What about experimental?
I'm not sure about experimental. I'm not sure about that one.
I'm just asking because when you ask those questions, those are valid questions, but I had to play devil's advocate and find out if there were other additional things. It just seems like a real invasive type surgery that if you have a Medicare patient who is, let's say, in their 90s and is kind of frail, does it become the doctor's decision or does it become the government's decision?
No, the government, on the contrary, the government never in my history interferes in that particular relationship between the doctor and the patient. It's up to the doctor and the patient to decide. And even if so, Mrs. Smith is 90 years old and she's got aortic stenosis and needs a valve replacement, you know, if the doctor feels that that's appropriate and the patient understands the risk attendant to going into such a procedure, then those two can consummate that decision and go, and Medicare would pay for the service. Versus the insurance company could very well say to the doctor, look, we reviewed this case, we've had our medical director look at it, and we just don't feel that it would benefit the patient and we're not going to pay. The insurance company, private insurance company, has every right to do that, and they often do that. So listen, let me get to the other calls. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. I'm going to go next on the line at 1-866-987-THOM is Richard from Chicago, Illinois, holding for almost an hour, and he wants to talk about Medicare. So welcome, Richard.
Well, thank you. So many people I know have been denied things by insurance companies. I mean, you hear a lot of it. I've been listening. I've been trying to come up with something here to change my – I'm on Medicaid.
Medicaid or Medicare?
Medicare.
Right.
And it's been around for 50 years, and you kind of wonder if these right-wingers are correct, why the world hasn't come to an end. And, you know, somehow they think the insurance system we have is just nirvana. And that's the ideal their worldview is about the free market. So you kind of wonder, I mean, we have a single payer in the country right now, which I think is Medicare.
Correct.
I don't think insurance companies have a darn thing to do with doctor visits, you know, waiting for a doctor visit, because I think that some of that has to do with how many doctors are allowed to go to medical school, which AMA has some involvement with.
Yeah, I agree. There's a shortage of doctors. That's the problem, is that we don't invest in our education and produce more doctors. We have so many doctors that I practice with who are very good doctors, but they just come from other countries because we have a shortage here. Why don't we invest in education so that our kids can get good educations in grade school and high school and college, and they can become the future doctors of America? I mean, that should be a priority.
Yeah. Well, basically, I'm still wondering why Medicare hasn't destroyed the medical profession and everybody's lives. It's been around for 50 or 60 years.
Medicare is a wonderful program.
Why has the world not come to an end? I don't
understand. Well, because they're drama queens. The bottom line is this. Medicare is a phenomenal healthcare system. It's incredibly efficient. It's incredibly deregulated. It's incredibly open with respect to the network. You can go to whichever doctor you want to go to, you can go to. There's no government bureaucrats, you know, telling you what you can or can't do. There's no death panels, nothing like that. Everything that they say about Medicare, the the proponents of the private insurance companies, everything that they say is bad about Medicare is actually the reality of the private insurance companies and the way that they operate. So it's really a whole system of propaganda. I mean, they're really going out there to dupe the American people and to trick them and to make them to think that government-run healthcare is this big evil system that needs to be just eradicated, when in reality, it's the insurance company that are culpable of everything they say that the government is. And it's sad that you see millions of people buying in to their lies and their hypocrisies and their propaganda. But look, that's why I'm on the program today. That's why I love Tom Hartman. Tom gives me the forum to speak directly about what's happening in healthcare, both at a local and national level, from somebody who actually touches patients, listens to their hearts, and helps them heal. So thanks a lot. I appreciate the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Okay, Freedom Express pulling up to its final stop. Get in there at 1-866-987-THOM. Okay, welcome back to the final segment, the Freedom Express pulling up to its final stop, its final destination for today. And Eric, I always want to take this opportunity to thank the whole team over there at the Tom Hartman Program, because they do a phenomenal job.
Absolutely.
Best radio program, without doubt, in all of America, all of the world, for that matter. Would you agree?
Yes.
Yes, I would agree.
I enjoy the show.
Absolutely. So we definitely want to thank, in no respective order, Danielle, Sean, Shane, Jim, and of course, Tom as well. And Tom is preparing a new documentary, which he's debuting. You should go check it out and go to Tom's website. Also, Tom has a great Facebook page. You can go to Tom Hartman on the Facebook page and continue the debate that we're having today about healthcare, government-run versus private insurance run system. So in any case, let's get back to the calls, because still a lot of people on the line want to speak here on Bring It On, Anything Goes Friday, Eric. So let's just go to Marty. We got Marty in WCPT. Marty is a doctor, a Republican, who also wants to share some of his thoughts on healthcare. So Marty, welcome.
Hi. I might lose my Republican card, but I don't think, if we're going to do a government form of insurance, which I'm not convinced one way or the other, we have to do it, either don't do it or do it all the way and put everyone into Medicare. In this bit about if you're under 29 hours, the boss doesn't have to pay for your insurance, why not just make it that if you work 20 hours, he has to pay half of the cost. If you work 10 hours, he pays a quarter. I've got a lot of patients who work 2 and 3 part-time jobs because no one wants to give them insurance, and it's ridiculous.
No, no. What kind of doctor are you, Marty?
Businesses.
What kind of specialty?
I'm a Christian gynecologist.
So OBGYN. So you obviously don't do a whole lot with Medicare.
I have some Medicare patients. A lot of my patients are 65 and older, a small minority, I should say. But I've got 2 90-year-old parents, and Medicare works great for them.
Right.
And while there are bugs that definitely need to be worked out, and America has to become more realistic, I've seen too many patients in intensive care units who I know the patient, when they were in the right state of mind, would have wanted to be disconnected at this point.
Sure.
But the children can't let go, and they want to keep grandma alive, even though grandma doesn't know who they are, where they are. And grandma, if could coherently answer the question, would say, please unplug me.
Right. And as you recall, Marty, during that whole debate about the end of life counseling, when Sarah Palin was saying Obama was creating these death panels, in reality, what he was addressing was the very thing that you're speaking about. And he said that, look, many people don't have that living will. They don't have those advanced directives, so that when something comes catastrophic, you know, their needs and their wishes are not met. And what Obama was saying under the Affordable Care Act is that we would pay a doctor like yourself, an OBGYN doctor or any primary care doctor for that matter, you know, for an hour of your services to just sit down with your patients. Like you said, if you had a 90-year-old woman who had, you know, for whatever, uterine cancer, and you know, you knew what the options were, you could sit down with that patient for an hour, be reimbursed by the government, and then discuss the patient the ups and downs of what, you know, a procedure could help them or not help them, or even talk about the advance directives so that you would circumvent that problem that now grandma's 90 years old, she's no longer of sound mind and body, she's in a coma, and you got people who are, you know, 2 or 3 degrees of separation involved. And, you know, they turned that into a death panel, Marty. That was ridiculous. That was a very reasonable thing to compensate a doctor a time, an hour, to discuss end-of-life planning. Would you not agree at least that's reasonable?
I totally agree. The only problem is you still get these family members who get hysterical. And unfortunately, there's a lot of distrust of the government, and a lot of people wouldn't agree to it, not because it's the right or wrong thing, but because our government has done many nasty things to the minorities in the past. Think of the studies on syphilis 50 years or more than 50 years ago, where the government's done a lot of horrible things, and there's a lot of mistrust of the system, and a lot of people would still not agree to do the reasonable thing. Unfortunately, at some point, you need to have the hospital be able to say, or the doctors be able to say,
sure,
no, it's time.
It's feudal care. It's feudal care. We all come to an end. It's time to, you know, go to our creator. All right, listen, I appreciate it, Marty. I want to get to some of the other calls, so thank you for calling in.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
All right, that's Dr. Marty calling in from WCPT. Let's go next to Mount Pleasant. We got Joe on the line. Joe, welcome to the program.
Joe.
Hey.
Dr. Mike.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for talking to me.
Sure, Joe.
So let's talk about insurance.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 82, and I've been dealing with insurance companies for 65 years.
Wow.
And all they want is that bonus at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
The more they can cheat you out of, the more they're going to get. And I've been down that road one time after the other. And if I have it do over again, I tell my daughters, don't go into real estate. Don't be a doctor or dentist. Become an insurance agent.
Wow.
Because the state of South Carolina says you will have insurance on your automobile.
Right. Right. Now, look, I agree with you totally, Joe. I mean, 82 years old, you've seen a lot. You've seen the shenanigans, the games, the barriers that the insurance companies create between the doctor and the patient, and it's pretty sad. But listen, I appreciate you holding on so long. I know you've held on for over an hour. You're 82 years old, and God bless you for your patience. And thank you for your commentary. We really appreciate it, Joe.
Okay, buddy.
All right, bye-bye. That's Joe calling from Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. See, that gives me hope, though, Eric. That gives me hope. When you got an 82-year-old guy from South Carolina holding on for an hour, he got disconnected, called back into the program, got back into the queue because he wants to have his voice heard. So that's touching to me to see that we have our elderly and the people who still believe in America. That's a true patriot there. That's what America is founded on. That's what it's all about.
Okay.
Yes, indeed it is. All right. As I said, thank you so much to the Tom Hartman team, and thank you to you, the listener, for participating in today's debate. Thank you to C. Edmund Wright for staying for an hour to debate with us.
For hanging in there.
For hanging in there. And, you know, even though he rejected the premise of every question that I ask and called me a straw man, nonetheless, it was still thoughtful for him to stay for an hour and discuss things. So take care. As Tom says, democracy is a participatory sport. So tag, you're in.
Been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. Angie'sList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at Angie'sList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.